award needs batteries, plus I don't have this on. There, that's better. So the review, it's probably because of this. Austin, it's probably because I didn't have my remote on. He can hear me now. Oh, it's flashing? Okay. Okay. You take care of our seasoned citizens. So he missed the introduction, but that's all right. We're introducing now chapter 4. And the title of our talk today is Don't Forget to Remember. That's our title today. Have you ever noticed as you read through Joshua that it's very thin on military accounts? Or the account is very thin on military details. Let's put it that way. As you read through Joshua, do you see anything there about the weapons they used? How many officers did Joshua employ in his army? Any details on that? Gina says no. How about battalions? Did he divide his army up into battalions? Did he have an elite force like Navy SEALs? What's another elite force, you military? Green Beret, is that American? Special Force, Delta Force, there you go, Mitch. Rangers. Did Joshua have Rangers? No. Training, if he did he train any of them? We don't know. We don't have those details because the emphasis is not on the physical, is it? What's it on? The spiritual, even with this Joshua story. The ultimate battle at Jericho is spiritual. The conflict looks like it's with the Canaanites and the Amorites, but really it's with Satan and his dark forces, his demons. If we backed up to Genesis 12:7, God is talking to Abraham, and he says, I'm going to give you a land, plus a great nation, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed. You remember those promises? Those are very key if you're studying the Old Testament. God set this land, Canaan. He set it apart to be a blessing for the planet. And it's a very strategic location, isn't it? Land of Canaan connects Africa with Europe. It's next to the Mediterranean. It's got fertile hills and valleys. Beautiful land at the time before it got ruined by humans and their sin. But at this time, God talking to Abraham, he says, I'm going to give you this land. Verse chapter 12, 2 of Genesis, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. In other words, the Hebrews were going to be the couriers of God's covenant to the whole world, to the nations. And Israel, the land of Israel, Canaan, was the parchment on which God's redemption story would be written. So the prophecies of the prophets would take place on this land. The sacrifices in the temple, the city of Jerusalem would be established. The town of Bethlehem is on this land. The Redeemer was born, or would be born, in that town. The Redeemer would walk here and live here and soak the dirt with his blood and shake the ground with his resurrection. That's why Canaan is important. But you know, folks, it's not about claiming real estate for a dislocated nation. It wasn't about it then, it's not about it presently, and it won't be about it future. It's about preserving a stage for the redemption story. Amen? And what is Satan's counter strategy? It's very clear. Contaminate the promised land and preempt the promised child. So in the 400 years that the Israelites are in Egypt, the Canaanites contaminated it pretty well. And then Satan is all through this time is working at preempting the promised child, preventing him from coming. Destroy God's people, that's Satan's goal, and destroy God's work. So Joshua's battle is a spiritual battle, just like ours. As Ephesians 6:12-13 points out, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. I've heard preachers, some that I really respect, say years and years ago that the war is real, and I still believe that. The war is real, the battle's real. Sometimes in our individual Christians' lives, we act like it isn't. And I fall into that, just totally wrapped up within myself, doing my own thing, thinking totally about physical things, what I need to do with the, you know, the car, the money, the bank, the family, the food, the clothing, the car, the money, the bank, the bank, and the list goes on, all physical stuff, just totally wrapped up in it, forgetting the war is real. Satan's attacking us at all times. This should be our theme. What is our theme? Theme or thesis is about remembering. God wants us to remember. It's important to do some remembering about who the real enemy is, what God has done, and to whom you belong. And the real enemy, is it that on the left or is it that on the right? You know, sometimes the idea of an actual devil strikes people as odd and outdated, doesn't it? The world blames the world's problems on genetics or governments or environments, and the list goes on. But it's not a cute, harmless little character of the cartoons. It's not a Satan's not an imaginary dark counterpart to the Casper the Friendly Ghost or the Easter Bunny. Maybe some people put those two in the dark side, but he's not the counterpart to anything that's good like that. He's the real enemy. He's real. What does 1 Peter 5:8 say? He looks like that on the right, doesn't he? Here it is. 1 Peter 5:8, he goes about seeking whom he may devour. That's quite a mission he's got. He goes about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. His name is Satan. Some people call him the devil. He's called Belial. Some people call him the obstructor. The Bible refers to him as the tempter occasionally, the evil one, the accuser, the prince of demons, the ruler of this world, prince of the power of the air. What does his name mean? Satan means adversary. Devil means slanderer. It's also called Beelzebub. That's Lord of the Flies. Wasn't there a book titled Lord of the Flies? Yeah. It's not a pleasant thought, is it? And I remember reading that book a long time ago. It wasn't a pleasant book to read in my mind. And this is probably why. Here's his rap sheet. Here's some of Satan's rap sheet. 1 Chronicles 21:1. Satan incited or moved David to do something he shouldn't have done. Luke 22:31. Satan has asked to sift you, Simon, like wheat. John 13:12. The devil persuaded Judas Iscariot to turn against Jesus. He rules the world and his spirit has power over everyone who doesn't obey God, Ephesians 2:2. So put all these passages together plus others. Satan incites, he sifts, he persuades, he binds, he blinds. That's 2 Corinthians 4:4. And rules. And he has one objective, John 10:10, to steal and to kill and to destroy. That's a picture of the thief there trying to get into the fold of the sheep. Either sends himself or sends one of his henchmen to steal and to kill and to destroy. Folks, here's the big thing here. Satan's ticked off at you. He's in a foul mood due to your talk about glory days and promised land living and walking in faith instead of fear, leaning on grace instead of guilt, listening to God's voice more than his voice. He's ticked off at you for that, if we could put it that way. And therefore, Satan has you in his sights because you are in enemy territory. And that's exactly where Joshua and this generation found themselves, in enemy territory. The Hebrews, for the first time in 5 or 6 centuries, are camping in Canaan, and they're facing Jericho. 40 years earlier, they could have been in there. How long has, there's two men especially that have been waiting for 40 years for this moment. Who are they? Joshua and
Caleb.
Plus, the probably this generation they're taking in were babies or children. Might remember the Red Sea crossing. And so think of how long they've been waiting. They're just chomping at the bit to go after Jericho. I don't know if you would be. Seems like they are ready to go, especially after this miracle God just performed for them. And they've crossed the river, and they're ready to go in there into the land. But there's one more word God has for them. Two commands. We're going to look at one today. Next one next week. One more thing he wants to say to them. Get them ready. It's kind of like maybe you could picture a young mom sending her child to school for the first time. And they get up and eat breakfast and have the backpack all ready and put the books in the back. And the little boy is just so excited to go to school. And they get out on the porch and mom gets down like this at eye level and says, "Now, I want you to remember what I've taught you. Remember who you are and remember whose you are, who you belong to." I can see some moms in here saying, "I never did that." I recommend homeschooling anyway. Sending a child off now is like sending him into Canaan. That's probably more pertinent to college kids. Well, I guess you don't have to bend down. Look them in the eye and say, "Remember what I taught you. Remember whose you are and who you belong to." Right? That's more appropriate for college kids. Two commands. The first one is, this is what God's doing. Getting them ready to go into Canaan, which they're standing on right now. Are you in chapter 4, Joshua, verse 6? "Let this be a sign among you." And what is it? We need to read verse 5. "Cross again to the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of tribes of the sons of Israel." They're going to take a stone and they're going to bring it out onto the west side at Gilgal, eventually it'll be named, and they're going to stack these stones. What are those stones for, people? He's telling them, remember something. "Let this be a sign to you so that when your children ask later, saying, 'What do these stones mean?' you shall say to them, 'Because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall become a memorial to you of the land forever.'" A memorial to the sons of Israel forever. He reiterates that in verse 23 and drop down to 24. "So that all the people may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty and you may fear Jehovah your God." That's verse 24. That's the reason that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty. Let these be a memorial. That's why that's underlined. A memorial to the sons forever. Memorials are important, and we find memorials throughout the Bible. And we're engaged in one, even in what we call present day, right? Every week, engaged in one. But he's impressing upon them that the secret of survival in enemy territory is what? What's the secret of survival in enemy territory? I lost my Ricola. Remember. Remember. That's why he's setting up a memorial. Remember. Joshua and Israel, record his accomplishments in your memoirs. In your memory, capture this crossing. In your memory. That's what he's telling them. Before you look forward to Jericho, look backward at the Jordan. At what God has accomplished. Now, they couldn't look to David as an example, Joshua in this generation, because David hasn't been born yet. But we can. We can look back at David. And David is a good example of remembering. And just taking a glance back. Looking forward, but also looking back. And we're not talking about, remember in the storms of life, we I believe that was where we talked about the fact that it's dangerous to dwell and sit in the past. But here it's where it's a good thing to look back, and we're focusing on what God has done. This is what David did when the Philistine Goliath. Goliath is David's Jericho. Goliath was a fortress of a man, if you want to put it that way. Big old guy, blaspheming the name of Jehovah. Now, we're farther down the timeline from Joshua. There's a king, King Saul, and Saul says, man, this giant's going to eat you up. And David said, the Lord delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear. He will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So let's put it the other way. He's going to deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Why? Because I remember when he delivered me from the lion and the bear. David faced his future by revisiting the past. And he defeated that Goliath, didn't he? Revisited the past. That was a thing that David held on to. And now, we go back to Joshua and the people. Don't go to Jericho until you've remembered Jordan. So set up these stones. Set up these stones. Can you and I take an example from this, folks? Is there anything we can learn from this, setting up stones, making a memorial, remembering, especially when we face challenges? How many of us here face challenges in life? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, just 8, 9, 10, just 10 of us. How many of us here face challenges in life? Yeah, we need all hands up, don't we? Spiritual, physical, mental, emotional. So why are you here today? Well, let's have a takeaway. Before you face a challenge, take a quick tour of God's accomplishments. Thank you, Justin, for reading Psalm 103. Bless the Lord, verse 2, O my soul, and forget none of his benefits. How long would it take us to write out his benefits? Spiritually, physically, just 5 minutes before we leave today? It would take a short time if we were speaking very generally, generalities, but specifics, it's going to take longer. But he gives us some here, some benefits here. For example, he pardons your iniquities. Ted, iniquities means sins. Okay? Simple word there. And he heals your diseases. And I wouldn't look at that as just physical. All around. Any type of disease. How many? All. On your family news, it'd be every one. He redeems you from the pit. One of the pits that most concerns us should be death, and he delivers us from that. In other words, he saves your life. He crowns you right there. What does Psalm say? With loving kindness and compassion. Think about that. Isn't that beautiful, the picture, us wearing that paradise crown? He wraps you in goodness, which is beauty eternal. He renews your youth. You're always young in his presence. He performs righteous deeds. That means he provides vindication or justice for the oppressed. So take all these things, folks, and put them in the trophy room in your heart. Create a trophy room in your heart. And whose trophy room is it really going to be? Yours or God's? Got God's trophy rooms, and it's going to have his trophies in it. Make a mental note of each victory that he has accomplished on your behalf. Each victory. Overcoming guilt. Overcoming anger. Envy. Some sort of addiction. Consider the paychecks he's provided you. The food he's put on your table. The homes you've lived in. The clothing. The nourishment, mentally, physically, spiritually. All the blessings he has given, all the prayers he has answered. Make a note of those victories and put those in your trophy room. Just like David did here, face your future by revisiting the past. Instead of trophies, maybe a better analogy for you is stones, rocks. Place rocks, mental rocks, in your mind of what God has accomplished. In this case, it's crossing that Jordan. In our case, we've crossed, as we talked about last week, we've crossed the Jordan. That we get over that barrier of sin and transgression through whose power, ours or his? Kyle? His. I know I ask tough questions, don't I? His power. Instead of trophies, maybe we could think of a memorial of stones of God's accomplishments. Can you do that this morning? How many of you see or know unbelievers who would benefit from God's accomplishment? I'm speaking specifically to the group that meets here and works here in Mount Vernon. How many of you can name and think about people you know that needs God's two people? Come on, how many? Okay, we've got more. I'm not asking you to name them. I'm just asking you to think about them. Extended family, relatives, co-workers, neighbors. If your trophy room is empty and you struggle to express your gratitude and thanksgiving and wonder of God's accomplishments, then you're going to struggle in sharing the wonders and the riches of Jesus Christ. Does he live in you? Do you bust out in zeal and excitement for what God has done for you? If you do, then it's going to be a lot easier to share with those people you just listed in your mind. Next week, we're going to remember who we belong, to whom we belong. And it's going to focus on a weird activity that God asked his chosen people to do. A strange activity. It's a strange, I guess you'd call it ritual. But he asks us to do the same as spiritual Israel before we become added to spiritual Israel. So we will look at that next week. Where's my tailor? Taylor, are you ready? Let's do what we normally do and stand and sing the song.
Number 86.
That he's slick.
The blue song.